Hey, everybody. It is your favorite Star Wars podcast hosted by me, Leslie, and my awesome kiddo, Finnick. Hello, Finnick.
Howdy.
We are back for episode 11. That is bananas. Straight up bananas. What do you think, Finnick? Can you believe we've done, this is now our 11th episode of Holy Snokes?
Not really. Just, I can't believe that we're in the double digits now.
Woo-woo! And it is fitting that we are talking about our namesake today, right? We're talking about Mr. Snokes himself in our episode today. So, Finnick, why don't you tell us what episode of Star Wars we're watching today, the name of the movie, or we're talking about?
So today we're going to be talking about Star Wars Episode 8, also known as The Last Jedi. Just a couple fun facts. It was written and directed by Rian Johnson, which that's important, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But it premiered December 15th, 2017. Its budget was $300 million, and its box office was $1.334 billion. So it's the second highest grossing Star Wars film.
What's the highest grossing?
Force Awakens.
Oh, okay.
So yeah,
okay.
It goes Force Awakens, Last Jedi, Rogue One, and then Rise of Skywalker, which we'll
really?
Talk about next time. I know.
Well,
it's crazy. It's crazy that Rise of Skywalker is in that list because of just how that movie came out. But I'm very proud of it. Good job, Rise of Skywalker.
I'm actually surprised that Rogue One is in that top. I mean, I like the movie a lot. Don't get me wrong. I just didn't know that everybody else liked it that much.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I feel like Rogue One people either love it or absolutely hate it. And my theory of why it was so popular is because the trailer was misleading. Like, they did a bunch of reshoots of it and completely changed the plot of the movie. So there's parts of the trailer that just don't exist in the movie. So, like, it really does kind of mislead you on what the movie's actually about. But, I mean, clearly it's a very popular movie because from that we got the Andor TV show, which was phenomenal. So
I haven't watched that. Surprise.
Well, we'll get you there. We'll get you there.
Okay. Okay.
Last Jedi, it's an interesting film in terms of like where it's in the timeline of production, because you had Force Awakens come out in 2015. Then you had Rogue One come out in 2016. So it was kind of like a palate cleanser almost from Force Awakens of like, yeah, we're going to take a second to like explore other themes and other stories in Star Wars before we like jump back into it. So I think that's interesting, cause, you know, Rogue One, we've talked about before, was the first standalone film. So I mean, I loved Rogue One. So I think for me watching that movie, it made me even more excited for Force Awakens. And especially in December 2016, that's when Carrie Fisher passed away. So knowing that this was going to be the last Star Wars film that we'd see her in, that she wasn't fully CGI like we'd eventually see in Rise of Skywalker. For me, it kind of made me more interested in watching the movie. And then I think especially knowing that Rian Johnson wrote and directed, because at that time he had done some other things, but I mean, it was kind of like, compared to J.J. Abrams, who did Force Awakens, you're like, who the hell is this guy?
I was going to say, tell me a little bit about Rian. So I know who he is really only through you. Because don't you have a shirt that says written and directed by Rian Johnson or something like that?
Yes, I do have a t-shirt like that. Rian Johnson, like, so his, like, directorial debut was a movie called Brick, which, like, got really good reviews, and I think it made like $4 million out of a $450,000 budget. So, like,
not bad.
I can't do math, but I know that that's pretty good.
You tested Gibson in math, don't you remember?
There's some math teachers that kind of ruined math for me. So, But he really gained like critical and commercial success with the movie Looper in 2012. Did you ever see that movie?
I didn't see it, but I know which one it is.
But then, yeah, that was like his claim to fame up until that point. And then he wrote and directed Last Jedi. And now we know him for Knives Out and Glass Onion.
I didn't know he did those. I love those movies. Okay, cool.
Yeah, so, I mean, definitely was someone that, you know, is a good writer and a good director. And I think that Last Jedi definitely put him into a higher echelon of Hollywood directors and writers, because then he was able to go on and do Knives Out, which was a phenomenal movie, and same with Glass Onion. And he's still working on a bunch of other projects. But Rian Johnson is important because for some reason, the people that hate this movie hate it with like a burning passion, and they blame Rian Johnson for it. Now, how do you, like, I'd say, let's just start very basic. I've talked about before, this is my favorite Star Wars movie, but what did you think of it when you watched it?
I loved it. I loved it a lot. I loved the beginning and the end, though, the most. I did feel like there's a big portion of the middle that it's not that it wasn't important, but when that whole scene or the whole section where Finn and Rose go to that casino place, what was it called?
The casino Bight.
That place.
Casino Land.
Casino Land. I don't know. Like, it was, I don't know. Like, I it was important to the story. I get it, to have Benicio del Toro in it, who I like a lot. But at the same time, I would have much rather that they focused more on Ben and Rey, or what Rey was doing, or what was happening with Leia. Even Laura Dern's character, what was her name? The purple-haired lady?
Vice Admiral Holdo.
Like, I didn't feel like they spent enough time on her. I would be really interested to know more of her backstory. I realize I'm jumping around. If you haven't seen the movie, I apologize. But the whole Poe insurrection, not Poe. What's his name?
Yeah, Poe Dameron.
Poe, okay. The whole Poe insurrection thing where he's like, I'm taking over the bridge. Like, I get he was just being a man, whatever. But I would have liked to have known more about Laura Dern's character, the Admiral, sorry, about her backstory and why Leia trusted her. And I don't know. I feel like they kind of missed an opportunity there. And I like the Rose and Finn story. I remember when it first came out, how much I was like, I like Rose Fennec. Isn't she great? But again, I really like the scene in the very beginning where her sister sacrifices herself. Like, I thought that was just a phenomenal scene visually, but also the storyline. And so I would have liked to have maybe learned more about that. But I mean, again, other than that, and I'm sorry if I'm disappointing you in how I think about it. I really, there were some key moments in it that, of course, Rey finding Luke and working with him, and his hair looked fabulous. I really liked it long. And then, of course, I liked the beginning with the fighting. I thought that was really cool. And then, of course, the freaking end. Holy shit. Where Rey and Ben are in the Red Guard, holy Snoke's freaking conference room.
Yeah.
Wherever you would call it.
The throne room.
The throne room / conference room. Like, from that point on, it's riveting. There's a couple of lines that he says that I'm still thinking about. where he tells her that she came from nothing, but she's not nothing to him. Like, oh my God, Ben Solo, what are you doing to me? What are you doing to her? I don't know. So, anywho, that's what I thought about the movie.
No, I would agree with a lot of that. I think you bring up really good points. And for some reason, we haven't talked about this with Force Awakens, but a big part of like the campaign for the sequel trilogy was that they really focused on like books and comics, where it would be like before The Force Awakens or before The Last Jedi or before Rise of Skywalker. So like with before The Force Awakens, like they wrote books and they had comics that like gave you an idea of like where the resistance was at that time, of like the political climate, like just very minor stuff. But a lot of it was kids' books, which was, I thought, very interesting. But then with Last Jedi, there's a comic that came out that actually like describes the relationship between Holdo and Leia, that they were basically, they've known each other since they were like kids, really. And that they've gone on adventures together, and like, you know, they're like a woman power duo. So like it really established like the trust that they have in each other, which I think really sucks that we didn't get that, to get more of that in Last Jedi. But I understand like for time purposes, like you can't get into like the nitty gritty. And same with Rose, we get a lot more of Rose's backstory. We get a lot more backstory about her sister, and we actually get a lot of backstory about Phasma too, because Phasma has a book that came out that describes her upbringing and her like power hungry journey through the First Order.
Now see, that also would be really interesting, because I felt you could tell how powerful she was, but you just didn't get that in the movie. But again, just like the Bible, the women are constantly left on the shelf, not given the due that they deserve.
But don't you feel like this movie kind of does the opposite of that? Like, it's the first time that we have this many female lead characters in a Star Wars film.
You're right. You're totally right. It almost every scene, I feel like there was a woman. Even in when it would show the big ship. What was the big ship called? The bad guy big ship. Where they were all on. With my favorite Hux. With George Weasley. It doesn't matter. Anyway, with the stormtroopers, they would show a lot of women on the bridge, which I thought was really cool. And then, of course, we haven't even talked about Carrie Fisher's daughter, Billie Lourd, was a big person in this film compared to, we saw her in the film before, but she had, I don't even know if she spoke, but I would say she was really heavily in this film. And then, of course, Leia and Rey. I mean, hello. Rey was phenomenal in this film. She was throughout it. So,
right, like the acting in this film for me is one of the reasons why I love it so much, because Daisy Ridley is just acting the shit out of this film, especially her scenes with Adam Driver. Like, I understand that there is a pretty big divide among the fandom about Rey's relationship with Ben Solo. And I understand both sides of it. I'm on the side that I fully am. I'm fully in support of this idea for Ben Solo that he is very good at pushing people away and doesn't think that he's deserving of good things in his life. And I think with the introduction of the dyad concept in Rise of Skywalker, I really like this idea that no matter how bad and, you know, how much of a horrible person he thinks he is, that there is someone that he's tied to that is trying so hard to show the good in him. And I mean, every single scene between Ray and Ben is just phenomenal, especially the introduction of their force connections and how that was directed. I really enjoyed, which is funny because the concept behind them and like how they were shot is so good in The Last Jedi. And then J.J. Abrams just like was like, yeah, that's great, whatever. And then just completely changes it for Rise of Skywalker. But there's something so like weird. There's something weird about them where it makes you feel like you're there with them during these force connection scenes, which like, I mean, I'd love to be in a force connection with. And so let's be honest about that.
I think we all know that.
Yeah, I think that's like that and my obsession with the clones. I think those are the two most obvious things about me that people have learned from this podcast.
So tell me more about, what did you called it? The force connection or no? Between Ben and Rey.
Yeah, the force connections. Now we know it as like the dyad, like their connections through their dyad bond. But there's something about it that I think this is why I like The Last Jedi. Every time I watch the movie, I kind of learn something new, or I have a different interpretation of something, or I notice a different like Easter egg. There's always something fascinating about that movie. And especially for me, to the point that I've watched it enough that I've memorized the script that I can now watch. If you go on Disney Plus, they have one where it's just the John Williams score.
Ooh.
So there's no sound effects. It's literally just John Williams for like 2.5 hours. But I can watch it and I like know what's going on. But even then, like, there's points where I'll watch that version of it and there's something in the score where I'm like, oh, that's so interesting. That's a callback to this movie. Or, oh, that the key that this score is in really changes my perspective of like how the scene's being told. So there's something I learned every time. And same with the force connections. There's something every time that they are connected to the force and they see each other that I guess I gain a new appreciation and depth for their characters. I think the most recent time I watched it, the thing that kept popping up into my mind is the anger and also like the fear that Rey feels the first time they connect and the first time she sees him, but also the like the kind of wonder and awe that Ben feels that first time.
Well, I don't think either one of them have ever felt that way about anyone, right? I mean, they finally have found someone that they have, that both of them have very, very tortured souls and hard backgrounds, but they finally found that person that they can empathize with each other and support each other at the same time, be afraid of each other. It's something that you just, you know, it was real to them, a real relationship, as twisted and scary and bad as it was.
Yeah, and I think now would be a good time to talk about Snoke, about the first scene with him and Kylo, of you can see just like the level of manipulation that Snoke is putting Ben under. How did you feel about that? Because we get a sense in The Force Awakens, we get the sense that, you know, Snoke is just a very scary figurehead within the First Order. And we don't really, this is the first time we actually physically see him. In The Force Awakens, we only see him through a holo projector. But how did you feel that first time that we see them interact? Like, were there any thoughts that came to mind?
Well, before we get into Snoke, can you tell me a little bit about his backstory? Do we know much about him?
We're still learning. So there's a couple things that we can kind of figure out based off of like context and from the Bad Batch in The Mandalorian. So we know now that Snoke is one of the clones that Palpatine made. We don't really know like if he's a pure Palpatine clone. We don't know like when he was created. We don't know how old he is. There's a lot of things about that we still don't know and that they're still kind of fleshing out. Now at this point, season 3 of Bad Batch has started. We've started getting more into the cloning project called Project Necromancer. So that's the project that was started during the Clone Wars in secret. And it's basically Palpatine trying to create a clone with the ability to sustain an M count, so a midichlorian count.
So that the midichlorians, those are the Scientology-esque things that the Jedi's have, right?
Sure, I feel like that's a good way to put it.
Like, it's the little, what do they call them in Scientology? BBs? It's the amount of BBs that the Jedi's have. They have more midichlorian than regular folks, right?
Yes, I think that's a good sentence statement for what the midichlorians are.
Okay, sorry. I just want to make sure I'm following.
No, yeah. So they just revealed that in the first 3 episodes of the Bad Batch that premiered just a couple days ago. But we don't really know, like I said, we don't know when Snoke was created. We know he was obviously able to sustain an M count because he has the ability to use the Force. We do know that he had to have been created pretty soon after either like after the Clone Wars, like sometime between that point to the fall of the Empire, because pretty much the second Leia gets pregnant with Ben, he starts manipulating Ben. So it's described in, which book is it? In Bloodline, which is focused on Leia. It's described that even since Ben was in the womb, there was always this sense of darkness radiating from him. And we now know that pretty much since before he was born, Snoke was kind of like convincing him that no one loved him, that no one understood him. And as he got older and started showing signs that he could use the Force, it just became worse and worse and worse. So it got to the point that, of course, we now know from The Last Jedi that Luke sensed it in him, tried to stop Ben, but quickly realized that wasn't the right call, but it was too late. And you know, Ben sees that and freaks out and destroys the temple. We know from the Rise of Kylo Ren comics that he finds Snoke after he destroys the temple, and Snoke's like, "See, wasn't I right? Like, you know, I've always been there for you. I always thought that you were powerful, that you weren't different." So it's like, God damn, like, you know, to be subjected to that your entire life, like, who is really strong enough to resist?
I honestly, I don't know how. I mean, it's true. I mean, he wasn't Ben's parent, but he was Ben's parent. Like, he has been feeding him abuse since he was pregnant, which is actually something that really happened. If a woman is under tremendous stress or abuse herself while she's pregnant, it can affect the fetus. And we know that. That's like a scientific finding, where the baby then would come out or be born with cognitive development problems, attention difficulties, behavioral problems. And I'm pretty sure when Ben destroys the temple, like you said, that could be considered something like a behavioral problem, fighting authority, that kind of stuff. So if Snoke has been whispering to him his entire existence, you're right. How could he say no to that? And I think that's what's so powerful when Ben turns the lightsaber and kills him. It's Ben is trying to be free of Snoke, and he thinks the only true way to freedom is with Rey as his partner, so that they can then rule the universe. In his mind, he truly feels like that's the most peaceful way to go, to unite the universe, but according to him. And Rey realizes that that's not gonna work. That's not the right way.
No, I completely agree. I think, you know, we could view Ben's relationship with Snoke as almost, quite frankly, just as his abuser.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I find so much strength in Ben's character, because, you know, now at this point with like comics and books and TV shows and the movies, we now understand the extent that Anakin was under that. He, ever since he came to the Jedi Temple and met Palpatine then as a senator, he had also been manipulated and coerced into thinking that the Jedi can't be trusted. And there's something about Star Wars that, like, mental health just doesn't exist. Like, or at least mental health care, because if anyone in the Jedi Temple at this point in the Clone Wars saw Anakin basically committing war crimes during the Clone Wars, I think someone would have been like, hey, I don't think he's right. Like, something's going on. But for some reason, it's in Star Wars, we're like, nah, man, like, it's cool. He just be a silly, goofy little guy. But I think that's what gets me, is as this has come more and more to light about the level of abuse and manipulation that both of these characters have been under, I've just fallen in love with them more and more and more, and it makes them more relatable and more human. And I think, especially when you bring in Rey's trauma and what that must have been like to be, at this point from what we know, be left on Jakku waiting for your parents to come back, and to be so,
as I say,
afraid,
she was barely surviving.
Yeah, barely surviving. And I think, you know, when Kylo says, you know, they treated you like garbage, like they just threw you away. Like, how could someone do that to you? Because I see the good in you. I see something that's worth fighting for. Like, how could you not like a character like who has himself gone through so much trauma and so much hardship, but is still able to, he can't see the good in himself, but he can see the good in others. And to me, that just shows that he would never be able to fully turn to the dark side, even though he clearly was trying his best by killing Han Solo and then killing his master and eventually becoming head of the First Order. I'm just saying, pretty good character. Don't understand why people don't like him, but whatever.
Well, you know, it's funny. The Benicio del Toro character, what was his name? Like BJ or CJ? What was his name?
DJ. DJ because it's an abbreviation for don't join.
Ah, well, that actually that plays into what I was going to say. As rascally as a character as he is, because he basically turns on Finn and Rose and leads to, you know, hundreds of rebels basically dying as they're trying to escape on the transporters. He makes really good points that really, what's the difference between the sides? They're both willing to sacrifice people for what they think is the right way, the good way to rule the galaxy. He's selling the same types of planes and weapons and everything to both sides. To him, they are the same. And so again, I think that continues to lead to the conflict that Ben is feeling, is that he recognizes that they're both the same, and he thinks he's figured out the way to go, and that's for him to rule the world with Rey as his partner, not necessarily by his side. But like you said, Rey recognizes that that's just as screwed up as everything else. And she feels more connection with the rebels than she does with him, I guess. Or maybe she's afraid. I don't know.
I mean, there's so much about their relationship that I think is left up to interpretation, and especially during this movie. I mean, I think about just like the novel, how conflicted Rey feels because she has finally found someone that understands her, but it means joining a fascist regime, basically. And
you mean the Nazis? The Nazi symbolism, like we've talked about it before, but the Nazi symbolism in this movie is like out of control. General Hux, like he is the Third Reich, like 100%.
Yeah, and that's the thing that really gets me is, and we've talked about this before, I mean, they're called stormtroopers for a fucking reason. Like, let's be real. There's a reason why they're called stormtroopers. It's because it's based off of, like, the Nazi regime. And the Empire is based off of, I mean, it's an amalgamation of a bunch of other regimes. You could argue that it represents the United States during that time of, like, the Korean and Vietnam War. And that there's elements of it from other dictatorships. And it's just this formation where we're like, yes, that's bad. Because it's made for children. So it's like, yeah, Empire, bad. Rebel Alliance, good. But this movie, in real, like the First Order, I mean, we know that they're a completely militaristic regime. And we're starting to learn more about them from Mandalorian. We're not fully there yet to like where we could start seeing like how it switched from the Empire, which was a formal government, to the First Order, which is completely just a military operation. Like, Jesus Christ, you're right. Like the throne room itself that they end up fighting in, like, and the Praetorian guards that guard Snoke. I mean, of course, they're based off of the Praetorian guards from the Roman Empire.
Mm.
But, like, that's another bit of history of, like, okay, we know how the Romans were, especially you know how they were with war. It's crazy when you think about how this is called Star Wars, and it do be based off of wars. That's crazy.
I honestly never thought about that. Oh my god, I'm an idiot.
Oh no,
I never thought about that. I get so wrapped up in whatever I'm watching at the moment. Like those guards, man. I know we've talked about how much I love kung fu movies, and for me, when I see those outfits or their uniforms, I imagine something in like a 1960s kung fu movie with samurais and stuff. It just blows my mind what they look like and how they fight. And Yeah. I liked those guys. Don't you have one of those models in your room?
Oh, yeah. I have a bunch of Praetorian Guard stuff. I love their design. I wish that they, it sucks that Ben and Rey kill all of them, because I wish we could see them in more Star Wars media. But, yeah, I've been obsessed with the throne room scene ever since it came out. Every time I watch it, I'm like still shocked that Snoke dies. Like every time Ben flicks it on and it cuts Snoke in half, I'm like, oh my God.
I keep thinking he's gonna come back. He doesn't come back, right? Like, he's really dead.
Yeah, Snoke's really dead, which I know that was a big thing for people that don't like this movie, is they're like, why did you kill this character when we know nothing about him? And that he was like, we were led to believe that he would be the big bad, so then like, who's gonna be the big bad now? Which I think at the end of Last Jedi, some might argue it'd be Kylo Ren, but now we know in Rise of Skywalker that it was Palpatine all along, which we'll have to get into that when we, in the next episode, when we talk about Rise of Skywalker. But
you don't really need a big bad. We're all big bad. Like, we all have the capacity to be violent and to hurt one another and to try to take power over one another. I feel like we see that in the news every single day, of how regimes, as you said, like the United States, is taking control over other people. And I don't think you need a figurehead necessarily. We're just all, we're born with that ability. And again, that's something that I feel like Ben is constantly fighting. And that's why he's so tortured. And as a character, I just want to hug him, you know. Oh, but you know who I want to hug even more? Who do I want to hug, Fennec?
I don't know, the forks?
No. Oh, those things actually annoyed the F out of me. No. In the beginning, when Poe contacts the General Hux and he's like, I need to speak to General Hux. And General Hux gets on the phone and this is General Hux. And Poe is like, I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Can you? Oh my God.
You wanted to give General Hux a hug because of that?
His little face is so sad. And what's funny is I literally looked up that scene, and people on Reddit just whine so much about that scene. They're like, it was so awkward. It made me feel uncomfortable. And I think this is why Rian Johnson is so brilliant in this film, because he adds that level of just, you need something to laugh about. And that's so absurd. That whole like interaction, I love it. That's probably my favorite part of the whole movie. I said it. The scene with General Hux on the conference call with Poe. Favorite part of the movie.
Yeah, General Hugs.
General Hugs. Yes. Oh my God. I'm making a t-shirt with his face on it. With Domhnall Gleeson's face on it. And it's going to say underneath, Hugs for Hux. Y'all get ready. It's going to be our first piece of merchandise we're going to sell from Holy Smokes Podcast.
I'll wear it.
Oh, my goodness. Well, can we talk about the last few scenes in the movie before we end our podcast for today?
Yeah, which scene did you want to talk about?
Well, when they're in they finally make it to that planet, and the little ice foxes are there. What was the planet called?
Crate.
Spell that for me. Like C-R-A-T-E?
C-R-A-I-T.
Okay. That, of course, and I'm sure a lot of people felt that way, totally reminded me of World War One, World War Two scenes where the rebels get into the pit, you know, when they're trying to fight or get ready to fight Kylo. When they're in the trenches. Yeah. Which I'm sure that's the whole purpose. But I was, in the beginning, I was like, oh, this is cool. They're in this fort. But then the fort's really old. And how are they going to survive? I'm sure a lot of us were feeling a little anxious about that.
Yeah, I remember being pretty nervous because I was like, oh, shit. Like,
this is it. These are the last ones.
Yeah, because the entire film, they're just killing rebels left and right. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, there might actually be the possibility that, like, very few people make it out alive, if any. And I still feel that way every time I watch it, which I'm like, dude, you've seen this a billion times. Like, you know what happens. And still, every time I'm like, oh, my gosh. Like it really, every time I watch this. Yeah, are they going to make it? It really, it sucks me in every time to where I just forget that this is, like, a movie that I've rewatched over and over and over and over again.
The scene where, you know, they're on the little planes and they're trying to make it to that crazy volcano laser. What was that called? I wanted to ask you, do you think Rose should have knocked Finn out of the air, or do you think Finn should have just gone for it?
I think actually Rose was right, because who is to say that if Finn had sacrificed himself, it would have destroyed it? You know, like, there's almost like a arrogance to it of like, yeah, like, I'm gonna be the hero, which we see a lot in Star Wars of like, yeah, I'm gonna, of self-sacrifice and like what that means. But there's a level of self-sacrifice before it teeters towards just being suicidal and just being crazy. So yeah, I think she did the right thing. I think his sacrifice just would have been another person lost, and it would have been another victory for the First Order.
I could see that, but I honestly have to disagree a little bit. The actor that plays Finn, John Boyega, his face when he was like so like intense, and then his acting in that last scene right before Rose ran into him, like, you just see this not peace but almost resolve that kind of goes over his face. I think that's when he went from trying to be the hero to doing what he thought was the right thing to do. And I thought that was just, I'm not a big fan of the Finn character. I like it, but I felt like that's, during that moment, that's where I really thought that was a really awesome acting job from him. And, you know, if that's what he thought he should do, then that's what he thought he should do. And I forgot that Rose knocks him out of the air. And then I was like, son of a bitch. I was ready for that damn laser to, like, blow up.
I would agree with you. I think that's the beauty of Ryan's writing, though, right? Is that it, especially in this film, it seems like there's so many beats that are left up for interpretation for the viewer, which I think is why I like it so much, is because it feels like the first Star Wars film in a long time that doesn't tell you how to feel.
Yes, for sure.
Which, I think about just the complexity of, like, the prequels and how some people could argue that George Lucas's writing is just a little bit cheesy, which I'm not saying it's not, but Last Jedi reminds me a lot of the prequels because there's so much context that is in every single scene, and it doesn't tell you how to feel. It allows you to kind of develop your own interpretation of it, which I think we could argue that's really important with DJ's character when he explains that, you know, both sides are just funding war. Because it lets you as the audience decide, like, who's really in the right here. Like, you could argue that no one's in the right, like, that they're funding war and that there's no purpose to war. But then you could also be like, no, the rebels are there, you know, the resistance is on the good side and the First War is on the bad side. But Rian Johnson's like, well, what does that mean? Like, what necessarily is a good person? What is a bad person? So I like what you said about Finn, because it makes me really think about, you know, are his actions in this movie selfish or selfless, and like how his development is. So,
And then Luke Skywalker shows up. And as soon as he walks in, I'm like, how the hell did he get here? Which, of course, we find out later. Well, a couple of different things. But tell me about what your thoughts were when Luke and Ben face off, which I guess Ben is back to being Kylo at this point. But when they face off for a lightsaber battle.
Oh, yeah. The first time I watched it, I was like, how the hell is he here? And every time I still watch it, like I said before, like there's so much of this film that surprises me every time I watch it. And that's one of the things where every time I'm like, how the hell did Luke get from, you know, this secluded island to know exactly where the rebels are? And I just like that whole scene because there's something about Kylo, like, after the throne room scene, after he's been rejected by Rey, that it's very, like, female rage coded to me.
He is pissed. He is pissed. Like, if it was a modern-day situation, he would be that girl that is drunk on top of the ex-boyfriend's car with, like, a sledgehammer and is going to town on those windows. He is on fire.
Well, and that's why I think I like him so much, is because it is that, like, female rage of, like, you know, women typically will conceal their anger and their rage until it kind of bubbles up. And then once it does, like, holy shit, all hell breaks loose. So it's interesting to see just, like, how hurt he is by Luke. And, of course, like, we now know it was a complete misunderstanding, but, like, Kylo doesn't know that. Like, Kylo woke up and fully was like, oh my god, my master is about to kill me. That's crazy. I gotta protect myself. And so to see this man that you've been, like, hunting for years and years and years, he just pops up. He's super arrogant about it. Like, you shoot him with a bunch of lasers and then he just, like, brushes it off his shoulder. Oh my god. Like, it makes me pissed thinking about it, because I would be like, yeah, I have to go down and beat this man's ass myself.
Yeah, it reminds me of the dreams that I have about Papa, where he cheats on me in my dream and I beat the living shit out of him. And then I wake up in the morning and I look over at him and I'm still mad at him, even though he literally did nothing. But yeah, it's a level of rage that I don't think I've ever been in real life. I kind of want to get there one day, but maybe just for fun. But I mean, yeah, he is bananas, straight up bananas.
And then especially once Luke disappears and you realize it was just a Force vision, and Kylo's like shaken at his core. I feel that so much because, like, I couldn't imagine, like you said, I couldn't imagine living with that level of anger and finally letting it come out. Like, I've been angry plenty of times before in my life, and I've gone to a rage room recently where I've thrown stuff, and, like, that gave me a taste of it. It's so tiring, like, to be that angry and to be just that wild almost. And so I couldn't imagine living like that constantly.
And he did it in front of all of his coworkers.
Oh my, I
like,
feel so
all
bad
of his
for him.
Coworkers, and especially, oh my god, can you imagine, like, having that kind of episode at work, and then you totally get thrown on your ass, and you turn around and everyone you work with, all of your subordinates, are looking at you like, what a freaking tool that guy is. Oh my god. Do you think they came and picked him up? Like in their spaceship, they came and picked him up, or did they make him walk all the way back to the ship?
Well, because like he walks with them into like the base, and he picks up like Han Solo's dice, and then it fades away. I bet you he was like, I need everyone to leave this room right now.
Because
he probably had like a Force Awakens moment where he just destroyed that base with his lightsaber, and I don't blame him.
No.
Because, yeah, that's so fucked up of Luke to do that. Like, clearly this is not a stable man, and you're kind of the reason why he's not stable. And you make a forced vision of yourself. You show up, you're super arrogant about it. You're fucking with him. And then you're like, see you around, kid. And then, like, you disappear. Yeah, like, it's completely valid. I think Kylo was so right for that. And I wouldn't want to give Hux a hug. I want to give him a hug. I'm just like, and like, brush like his hair and be like,
shoo, baby girl. Shush, baby girl. Yeah. Are you okay?
Yeah, you're okay.
Let me make you some cookies. You'll get better.
Oh, yeah, I feel like Kylo needs like a weighted blanket and a cup of tea. And he, like, I'll draw him a bath and like be like, okay, like if you need anything, just let me know.
Yeah, yeah. And then
yeah, he needs some self-care.
Self-care. He needs a little cocoa butter for that scar. But oh no, he had the tool thing that fixed it as much as it could, I guess. So
yeah, the droid. That looked painful.
It did look painful. I know we're getting close to time. I'm trying to remember if there's anything else I wanted to bring up before we're done. Oh, one thing. Oh my God. The freaking what was he? He was like the evil BB-8. Love that little guy.
Yeah, they on set they nicknamed him BB Hate.
Ah, BB Hate. I love it. And the one thing I have consistently complained about in every episode we've done is the lack of human resources that we see that enables all of this to happen, especially in the Empire. You know, we don't see the hiring and firing of people or who makes all the uniforms and that kind of thing. But we did in this movie. We saw the ironing room, the place where all the uniforms get spiffed up and make it look really good. I was very happy about that.
I will say there is a deleted scene you can watch on Disney Plus where like they're walking through basically like cubicles.
No.
And I always think, I'm like, is this like, because they're on the Supremacy at this point, so like Snoke's ship, and I'm like, yeah, is this like head of HR? Like, like are they sneaking through, like, or what if it's not even HR? It could just be like administrative assistants that are at their desk typing away, and they're like, these two people kind of look a little suspicious.
And they're just trying to do payroll, baby. They're just trying to make sure that everybody gets their like $1 every week, that I'm sure they must give them something like that. They're just trying to make sure that they have adequate health insurance, and they're just trying to do their job. And then these random people walk in. I got to see that scene. That'll make me feel better.
Yeah, that you're right, that there is some sort of first order HR.
Yeah.
No, I think it'll make me feel a lot better seeing that.
Okay, thank you. Well, I guess we're about at time. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about real quick?
Overall, I would just say as I've gotten older and as this film has aged more and more, I have become more open to the criticism of it, but I still think it's one of the best Star Wars films, and I think because it doesn't feel like a Star Wars film. And I think we will eventually get to the point where it'll kind of be like the prequels, where the prequels were hated when they came out, but then they became so loved by the fandom. So I think we'll eventually get there. I think people will eventually come around to The Last Jedi, and I will just do what I can to keep defending it, and because I've been doing it since 2017. And oh my God, that's been 7 years. I feel so old. And yeah, so go watch it. It's pretty good. Just and go watch the John Williams one, because I want them to keep doing that.
Well, I'm super excited about our next movie, because The Rise of Skywalker is my favorite Star Wars film. And there are some scenes in that movie that I think about all the time. And I'm so excited to watch it. And I encourage everybody to rewatch it with us, because in our next episode, episode 12, we will be talking about it. And the cool thing, well, I guess it's not really cool, but I don't know if you remember, Fennec, but we saw this right before the whole COVID thing happened. It was the last movie that I saw in theaters for 3 years. So I'm super excited, because it really does hold a special place. And it was actually, I think, the first film that you and I saw together in the Star Wars trilogy, sequels. So.
But then that also means once episode 12 ends, we have completed all the movies.
I can't believe it. I made it.
Yep. Taken us a couple years.
Well, yeah, because we started the podcast during COVID too. So
yeah,
look at us. We finally got through all the movies. I can't believe it.
Good job.
Thanks. And maybe just a little hint. I might get my first Star Wars tattoo soon. So maybe that'll happen before we do our next podcast.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows?
Who knows? Well, thanks, babe, for yet another fun hour with your old mama talking about Star Wars.
Yeah, of course. I love doing it. I'm glad that we're going to keep doing it.
That's right. Well, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.